Hello, sexy nerds of the Nerd Empire. Welcome to this week of the
Nerd Empire podcast. Warm as it is.
We are your inner conclave of nerd. My name is Diz, and I am your pop culture and sports nerd. Don't fucking interrupt me in the middle of my
intro. Weren't you supposed to call it the Nerd Imperium? You said the Nerd Empire.
God, see? It's you interrupted me.
No, but you said Empire before he mentioned
it. I thought it was Nerd Empire, and the people who were part of it were the Nerd Imperium. This is way too confusing. We need to streamline this.
Whatever, dude. Who are you?
I'm Ollie. Wait, did you introduce yourself?
Yeah, I did.
I'm Ollie, the classic nerd.
And I'm Vian, the comic book nerd.
We were talking about running temperatures, which is why we got
sidetracked. Yeah, because Ali likes to fucking run his house at 60 degrees.
It is true. Like when there's brownouts in California, that's because of me. You know what brownouts are, right?
No.
It's where Ali casts a spell and his vision shows up over into the clouds.
It's fucked up. Brownouts are like rolling blackouts.
Oh, what the fuck?
I think it comes from the official term, right? This blackout is like when you don't remember anything.
Yeah, and then when you're drunk and you brown out.
Brown out is...
It's like you intermittently go in and out.
Intermittently going out. Originally, I thought brown out meant that you went unconscious and pooped yourself.
That would make
Which actually
sense.
Makes a lot Which more sense more when sense you think about it, right? Because you don't really... Yeah. But, you know, it's really... We had brownouts in California when Gray Davis was governor. It was like in high school.
We were in high school. Man.
Yeah, and then like we had this thing where like...
Flex your power.
Yeah, or we had all that issues. And then that's the reason why Arnold Schwarzenegger became governor of California.
And then we ended up blaming everything on Arnold.
Yeah.
Because Vina had a thing where like everything that went wrong in California, we blamed on Arnold. It was the thanks Obama before thanks Obama was a thing.
Thanks Arnold.
We'd be like, thanks Arnold.
Oh, we'd be like, fucking Schwarzenegger.
Fucking
we'd
Schwarzenegger. Say that. That's what it was.
Yeah, because it'd be like a sprinkler system like watering a sidewalk.
Like, fucking Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
As if he was in charge of that one sprinkler. Yeah. Micromanaged sprinklers and shit.
I mean, maybe he has like an inferiority complex, doesn't he?
Controlling, I don't know what it is.
Bodybuilder
but
guy.
Anyways, flex your power was a thing when we were growing up. It's still a thing. Like, you know, they tell us to please put your thermostat when you're away at a particular temperature.
Yeah.
Make sure you don't have your AC constantly running. Turn off your power at certain times in order to avoid blackouts. As California's been doing this for 10 years plus at least.
Yeah, long time.
Long time. And it's just, you know, whenever it gets hot, just be careful about these things. And I am the single reason, like the sole cause of why we do have brownouts. Because I don't do any of that flex the power stuff.
No. That is true. Yeah, it's like a meat locker.
No, they're like, put your temperature at 75 degrees. I'm like, 60 degrees.
Yeah.
But I want it so cold in here that when people come in, they get a chill. Like, you know that chill you sometimes get? They say, oh, someone walked over my grave. Right? That's a southern saying.
That's never a saying?
Heard?
No.
Ooh, someone walked over my grave.
I've never heard that before.
That's when you get a chill. It's like someone walked over
what
your grave.
What the hell, man?
I don't know what it means because you're not dead yet. So whatever. Someone walked over my grave.
I also don't understand, don't look a gift horse in the mouth.
That's a Trojan horse thing.
Why? I don't understand.
Because the Trojan horse hid inside of the Greeks hid inside of a wooden horse. They brought the horse inside the walls.
Oh.
Yeah. So when Greeks bearing gifts.
Oh,
right?
So.
And don't look a gift horse in the mouth. That's where it comes from.
Oh, because there's something else inside.
And then there's another development to that deals with the horse races and stuff like that.
It's just weird, man.
There's some weird sayings out there.
Like, I don't get it.
But I do. I want people to get a chill when they come into my house. Like, ooh.
Yeah.
That's true. Never mind the spine-tingling chill of Ali's gaze upon you.
Yeah.
He also wants the temperature to be cold as well.
Even more uncomfortable. Yeah. You know, when I do it, I want guests to leave early.
You know what it is, right? It's because you're the devil.
So they do at Del Taco.
Keep it really cold. It's what they do at Yogurtland, right? Yeah. Really minimalist, like furniture, so that when you sit there, it's not fully comfortable. You leave after you eat your yogurt. No one lollygags at Yogurtland.
Well, yeah, they have things for that.
Minimalist.
The colors and shit.
Yeah, super
for their,
uncomfortable. Yeah. I do the same thing in my house.
Yeah.
Just get it so cold that I'm comfortable, but everyone around's like, shit, we need to get out of here.
Well, it's like I said, you're the devil, so you're used to it being hot in hell. So when you're not in hell,
I do run, I don't run warm, but I dress really warm.
Uh-huh.
And because I'm a bald man, when I sweat, you could see it.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Right? I don't sweat as much as you do. You sweat very heavily, like your body sweats.
My armpits sweat.
Because you're a little hairier than I am.
No, I have hydrohidrosis.
Yeah, you're also hairier than
I am. That's also true, but I shave my armpits and my body.
But so you sweat a little bit more than I do, but my sweat is visible on my head.
Yeah.
Right? And I don't...
I don't sweat that much on my head.
No, it's more for me.
Do you have a visible glisten?
I get a glisten.
We've been friends since we were 9 years old. And I think the second you begin to sweat is when you go home.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I've never seen you sweat every time.
I don't sweat very often. Yeah. Very rarely. But usually when it's... For me, the sweating is going from temperature to temperature. So when I go from outside to inside.
Yeah.
That's the big, that's where like that moment where it takes my body to adjust. Like whenever I step into the classroom right before I start teaching, mm-hmm. that moment is like, yeah. I'm covered in fucking sweat. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's like that thing where it's like you just take a shower and you're all dry and then like you leave and you're like, sweat. And all of a sudden you just start sweating after that shower. Like I always thought that it's was kind of weird.
What is it? Your metastasis? What is it called? You're not in mitosis.
I don't know, man.
Your rheumatoid arthritis. What is it called? What is it called? Your homeostasis. That's what it is. Your state of balance is off.
I love how you were looking at me like I knew the answer.
I'm not a biology major. You're like, yeah. And I'm having my
of course, Diz is, you know, is the biology. Of all the people in this room, Diz is the biology
we
guy.
Literally made, this, we mentioned all sorts of words.
You know, I have, other than homeostasis. I have a friend who doesn't wear deodorant because she doesn't sweat. Like legitimately doesn't.
Well,
sweat.
Even if you don't sweat,
no, it's called deodorant for a reason.
But she doesn't get
deodorant.
Smelly.
Deodorant.
She doesn't get smelly.
That's what she thinks.
I mean, I've smelt her.
I'm pretty sure she stinks.
Did she know? Her. Was it consensual?
Well, I hugged her. She doesn't smell.
Okay.
Did you sniff her consensually?
You don't smell like BO.
That shit is weird.
No, every human gives an odor, whether they sweat or not. Because you excrete oils from your pores.
Oh. Yeah, it's just a human thing.
I was
wearing
deodorant.
I was at PAX West this weekend, and I had a lot of that shit.
Or DL?
Oh, yeah, Seattle. It was Seattle, and it was PAX West. It was nothing but video game nerds.
Oh, God.
Smelled it all over the place. Half of it was from the people I was working with.
Hygiene is not exactly optimal amongst the gaming community.
I have to ask you a question, guys. Like, I don't understand. I've seen this more with the gaming conventions than I have with any other comic convention. Mm. What is up with people wearing kilts? I don't understand this. I saw literally...
Oh, 'cause they're in a clan.
Yeah.
I've never seen this phenomenon personally.
I have seen... this weekend, more specifically, I've seen such a concentration... of white people wearing kilts at shows. And the people that I work with, because I was working for like a luxury D&D dice company this weekend, right? Uh-huh. And they all had kilts on. It was the only minority that was working that booth, right? But it wasn't just us. It was like literally people. There was hundreds of people, and all of them were wearing kilts. I don't understand this.
It's because they're in a clan. That's what the clansmen do.
Yeah, but I don't think that's a gamer.
Clansmen.
I saw what you did there. Yeah. I don't think that's a... Is that a common gamer thing?
I don't see.
They're all brave hearts.
I've been out of the gaming world long enough that I don't.
It's become more popular in nerd culture in general.
That people wear kilts?
It's weird because, like.
Are you sure this is not just a PAX West thing? Not like. Broader gaming. No, like you've seen it outside of PAX
West? I've seen it at, yeah. I've seen it at other conventions, but I've seen the most concentration of kilt wearers at PAX West.
Huh.
And I'm not quite sure why.
I've never gone to a gaming convention, but I've gone to gaming events and I've never seen.
Well, maybe
it's just a convention thing. Maybe
it's a convention thing.
That could very well be it because you don't really see them very often in public, obviously.
Easy access for you to poop and pee with the kilt. Maybe that's why. Just
I mean, you do wear underwear.
Yeah, it's not like they're going. No.
Yeah, but then you just take off your underwear and lift your kilt as opposed to pulling your pants down.
I guess. It's a nice breeze.
I don't know.
I will say, but it is Seattle.
Have you guys ever worn a kilt? Cool. I feel like V's worn a kilt.
I've never worn a kilt, no.
They try to get me to wear one, too. No, this is a story. These motherfuckers, I was sitting at the booth,
uh-huh.
right, halfway through, like, we're going to go to lunch, we're going to the surprise place, okay. right? Next thing you know, there's 12 of us that work that booth.
Mm-hmm.
Next thing you know, I'm in a fucking kilt shop in the middle of downtown Seattle eating Domino's pizza while these other people try on custom-made kilts.
Was the Domino's inside the kilt shop?
It was.
What?
It was, well, I mean, the Domino's pizza was inside the kitchen. There was a Domino's inside of it, right? And they were like, well, hey, it's a place called Utility Kilts in downtown Seattle, right? They make utility kilts. So all their kilts are really weird. They have pockets and shit. Like, they're not traditional kilts at all.
Huh.
And number one, how is it that they're able to keep a brick-and-mortar store in downtown Seattle is beyond me. Right, but I'm sitting there going in there. There's kilts that are like camouflage colored. You know, there's like leather ones that have weird sex straps on them, I'm assuming. Right, and all sorts of weird shit. Right, I was the only minority person even within vicinity here.
There are Scottish Asian people.
Yeah, I'm sure there are, but I don't imagine.
I've seen. Asians in kilts before.
Yeah, well, I've heard. I actually met a Chinese guy with an Irish accent once. It's I'm not. That doesn't throw me off at all, right? But the fact that we were in the Pacific Northwest and they were just selling kilts.
There's
at a
bunch of hipsters there, dude.
Is the Pacific Northwest a
hipster hot
strong zone? Contingent of Scotsmen?
No,
it's, I don't think so. I wouldn't imagine what, so.
Because you know, like
Seattle remind them of Scotland?
Well, no, you know, because like Midwest is a Scandinavian, right? Like,
yeah.
You, there's certain ethnic stonk that have like
Scandinavian in the Midwest.
Yeah, Midwest is heavily Scandinavian. Well,
like the Pennsylvania Dutch.
Yeah, a lot of Midwest has a lot of Germanic, Norwegian, Swedish, Swiss, like that kind of.
Like maybe like what is it? Minnesota has a big
Minnesota,
German.
Minnesota has it.
So like, there's like, I wonder if maybe you know the Pacific Northwest is Scotsman territory.
It could be. Either way, there's one more fucked up thing that I thought was weird. I was walking through the hall. This was a beautiful... PAX is such a cool event. So if you ever get a chance to go, go. But what they did was they did this thing where it was like they had these booths. What I was happy with, they had booths that were like feminist gamers. They had one that was, you know, about LGBTQ in the gaming community. You know, a lot of social justice ones, right? Hmm. But they all put them together. And rather than keeping them in the hall with the game designers where we were... There was, he had to like go through like these, this doorway, and there was like a auxiliary room, and they were all bunched up in like a corner somewhere.
So all the activists got like put aside?
They got, yeah, they got like put on like this like other room.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because you mentioned activists. The biggest activist in the NFL just signed a fucking huge deal with
Nike. Yeah, I heard about this.
Yeah. Our boy Colin Kaepernick. He signed a multi-year advertisement deal with Nike. They'd put out a campaign where it's like, you know, stand up for something, even if it costs you everything, just do it, right? Mm-hmm. It's a picture of Colin Kaepernick. Dude, that deal that he signed, so he got signed a deal that, like, superstars in the NFL get, right? So
this
like,
is a guy who hasn't worked in the NFL.
He hasn't been in the league for 2 years, right? So, like, this is coming up his third season where he's not playing, I think. Or second season, one of the two. But he got signed a huge deal. It's worth, like, millions of dollars a year. They haven't given us a number. But it's worth millions of dollars a year, and it's like people online are really like about it. But then you have those crazy white people who are now they're cutting off the Nike logo on their pants and on their socks.
Yeah, I saw some of these tweets. At the same time that Colin Kaepernick has signed his deal, Levi Strauss. Jeans company.
Not the anthropologist.
Dedicated. That's Levi Strauss. Is going to be dedicating several million dollars to preventing gun violence.
Holy shit.
This was a company that after the Parkland incident basically said that they would not allow open carry in their stores. And so they're taking a big step, and now a bunch of people are pissed off at, like, I'm going to be wearing
dungarees,
hangers or whatever, you know, the other jean company is.
Yeah.
So there's a kind of pushback against it. I saw some of the tweets about Nike in particular. One guy looked like he had chewed through his socks.
It was pretty bad.
Chewing his socks to own the libs.
Yeah. I'm like, you couldn't cut straight like through the sock like that? Like, did that weird, like, the weird angle.
I saw others that had burned their shoes. There's one that burned their shoes and, like, their lawn was also on fire, like, patches of their lawn. And I'm like, you just destroyed your lawn. You probably cost yourself several hundred dollars, maybe even $1,000 of damages.
It wasn't that weird, awkward kid with the braces, was it?
The awkward kid with the braces was like, yeah, I'm going to burn this. He had put a bunch of his shoes out, and he burnt them in his barbecue grill. Yeah,
and they were, like, playing the national anthem in the background. And he had, like, a bunch of them.
So, again... There's something quite fascinating about the pushback against Colin Kaepernick.
I just don't get it. Dude.
Because the argument has always been that because he
knelt
during the national anthem, right? And even though it repeatedly him and everyone has clarified, we are not protesting the anthem, we're not protesting the flag, we are raising awareness for gun violence, police brutality, Black Lives Matter, right? This is what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the day, if you have an issue with these people, you have an issue with what they stand for. You don't hide behind the flag. You have an issue when a black man says that Black Lives Matter. You have an issue with police brutality. You're okay with it.
Yeah.
You're okay with people getting shot. You're okay with
they
black
deserve
people
to die.
That's what you're fundamentally saying. No matter how much way you twist, turn it, or say it's about the flag, bullshit, it's not. Because you know why? Kaepernick hasn't been kneeling for 2 years.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right? If you're still protesting at this point, you don't like Kaepernick because he's a black man that's speaking out.
That's a really good point. I didn't actually see it that way. It is. That actually makes a lot of sense.
I mean, look, but he hasn't knelt in 2 years. What's your issue with him now?
Yeah, it's like, technically they won because he hasn't been employed. Yeah. So,
Hasn't been employed.
By the way, his collusion case against the NFL is going to trial.
Yeah, it is going to trial.
So it's going to, which a lot of people didn't think it would, but now it's going to trial.
Yeah, that should be interesting.
Yeah, which is pretty interesting. And, like, something that pissed me off about that was, so there's a lot of people saying like, oh yeah, well he just sat out, you know, like there's no collusion. They were gonna trade for him in San Francisco or in Denver. Yeah. Right?
I hate this word collusion, by the way. People use it too much now.
Well, the thing is yeah, Denver made a trade, try to make a trade offer for for Kaepernick, and they wanted to bring him over. But at the time, he was the starter, so they wanted him to come in, take less money, and be a backup in Denver, right?
Wow.
So, yeah, any person who's a starting quarterback on a team and making more money is going to say no to that. This is before the fucking anthem protest or the protest happened during the anthem, right? So it's like, well, no, he got offered a job. No, he wasn't. And they're like, well, the Ravens offered him a job. No, they didn't. They didn't offer him a job. They were going to, and they backed out because they're like, oh, well, his girlfriend said something. Like, don't give me
that's so weird, though, because didn't they employ a murderer?
Ray Lewis didn't he
kill somebody?
Yeah, he did. He got away with it. He never went to, like, trial for it, but, yeah. They also had Ray Rice employed until
he's the one that punched his wife in the elevator, right?
Until the whole video came out, they had him on there. Like, don't give me this shit. Like, that it's you don't take players that do bad things because fucking NFL players do garbage things all the time. Ben Roethlisberger was accused of rape twice.
I remember that, and they only suspended him, right,
or something like that. Suspended for like a few games.
See, that's the thing. I think this is actually true with, I think I would imagine any company at the end of the day, right? It's not so much about what they did as much as about the optics of what they did.
Exactly.
Right, and that's really messed up because technically Kaepernick didn't hurt anybody.
No.
You know, he actually, this was probably the most peaceful protest
ever.
They somehow managed to, number one, pervert it into this thing that had nothing to do with that. It was number one. It's just absolutely ridiculous, right? It's like saying there was a meme that kind of came up, and while I hate kind of quoting memes, it was the one to be like, you know, saying Kaepernick is protesting the flag is like saying Rosa Parks was protesting buses.
Or Gandhi was protesting food.
Exactly, right? And it's such a ridiculous thing. That the problem is, though, people somehow managed to believe it, regardless of the fact that there are so many ways.
It's not that they believe it. It's that that one of the things that we fundamentally see in conservative activism is there's coded language.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
They call them a thug.
This has always been a common feature in conservative activism, particularly in conservative politics, right? And quite famously, Lee Atwater mentions that you can't say the N-word anymore, but you can say things like zoning. You can say things like law and order, right? The idea of law and order, when people say law and order, right, what they fundamentally mean is the law protects me
from the blacks,
from the minorities, not always blacks, but generally black people, protects me from minority, but does not bind me, meaning that the law doesn't affect me.
That's true.
Right?
Okay, that makes sense.
And in turn, the law refuses to protect minorities, but will bind them. That is, that it will target them.
Like the ring of power.
So you will see this most prominently in the fact that Donald Trump has committed a series of crimes.
Mm-hmm.
These are clear, right? And people will go, so what?
Yeah.
So what? But had Donald Trump been black, they would say prosecute him.
Bro, Obama couldn't wear a fucking tan.
So you see what I'm this is the coded language of it. So when people talk about protests on your own time, what they're saying is protests that are not inconvenient for me. You can only fit within certain narratives as a black person. You can be a black person if you are quote-unquote respectable enough, right? And so respectability politics plays a big factor in this, and even minorities themselves often replicate this language sometimes. Well, we shouldn't protest. We should just work hard. We should wear suits. We should, in order to seem respectable. But white people will say this about minorities, right? Your politics has to be respectable, by which they mean that you should have my politics. If you don't have my politics, you're not respectable.
Yeah. And if you're wearing baggy and loose clothing, you deserve to be profiled because people who wear baggy and loose clothing usually steal.
Oh, and the second component is you could be black and an entertainer, right? Oh. Certain types of entertainer. You can be an entertainer. What you can't be is black and an activist.
Yeah, like Paul Mooney.
So if you take someone like Colin Kaepernick, who's done nothing more disruptive than Martin Luther King Jr. did. Martin Luther King Jr. was 10 times more disruptive than Colin Kaepernick is. But if Colin Kaepernick is a thug, then that means even the most simplest, superficial, most basic forms of activism are not acceptable in the white community.
Not if you're black.
Not if you're black. That's the first thing. The second component of this is that conservative activism has always been fundamentally about the preservation of privilege.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right?
Whereas liberal or left-wing activism has been about the expansion of privilege, right? Yeah. Expansion of voting rights, expansion of equal rights. It's always been about that. There has never really been truly conservative activism up until the civil rights era, when we start to see a kind of a pushback against the civil rights. We see these kind of the first kind of emergings of a conservative activist movement under Anita Bryant, who was anti-gay, anti-homosexual. She was a Christian singer, led a campaign against an ordinance in Florida that banned discrimination against sexual orientation, quite famously got a pie to the face. also, quite famously, ended up changing her position because when she had a child out of wedlock, she was ostracized by the Christian community.
Of course.
Right? So that kind of woke her up a little bit. Phyllis Schlafly, quite famously, was the most famous conservative activist. She was a woman that led the anti-equal rights amendment movement. She was against equal rights. She believed in traditional families with the man as dominant and the female as not so. But as you can see, in both of these instances, it was about preserving privilege and denying rights to others.
Yeah.
That has always been the heart of conservative activism. There's never been, as a result of that, there's never been a particularly vibrant activist movement on the Christian, on the right, because basically it's just politics.
Yeah.
You're not outside the mechanisms of power.
No.
You only protest when you're outside the mechanisms.
That is true, because they, I mean, currently the system staying the way it is what benefits them, so it's them preserving the...
Yeah, so at its heart, you have people on the left who will always be outside of the system, right? Whether they're leftists, they're people of color, they're labor organizers, you know, they're environmental organizers, all of that. They're outside of the mechanisms of power, so they will try to mobilize against the mechanisms of power. Conservatives have just simply worked within the mechanisms of power to get what they want, judges, etc. So the rare instances in which it moves over to activism, their activism is generally what? Spending millions of dollars to get a judge elected.
Right? Yeah.
If it moves beyond that, when they move to protest, they don't know what to do because they've never had a long history of protest, which is why you end up with things like, I'm going to burn my Keurig. Well, dumbass, you've already bought the Keurig.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to burn my socks. Asshole, Nike doesn't care if you burn the socks.
Literally.
You've already paid Nike.
We've seen people tweet J.K. Rowling, right? And like,
burning her books. Like, thanks.
Thanks. You already paid for them. I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
This is the heart. This is why I'm saying that they don't know it, because their activism comes from something different.
Like for us, right? When I say that I am going to protest Papa John's, I'm not going to buy a pizza, take a piss on it, right?
Yeah.
I'm not going to buy the pizza.
Yeah. They don't know. Well, they don't know because they've never had to really boycott anything.
Yeah.
So here's the point, though. When you take this history that I've just kind of shortly given you an example of it, and you apply it to the Kaepernick situation, then you see what's actually going on. They are sitting there protesting by doing what? Burning things.
Yep.
Right? They clearly have a right to protest. But Kaepernick, does not have the right
to protest. But you can protest him.
You can protest him protesting. He can't protest, right? How dare he protest? In other words, it's about what?
Him
not having access to protesting.
Yeah.
It's about restricting it, preserving the privilege to protest. The privilege to protest is for white America, not for black athletes.
Yeah.
Do you see the logic that goes in there? That's why there's such an issue with Kaepernick.
Yeah, just shut up.
He's a black athlete who is accessing something that he's not supposed to. He doesn't have the privilege to protest. You see that? That's the heart of it. In the same way that Anita Bryant's going, gay people don't have the rights of the same as straight people. Or Phyllis Schlafly's like, women don't have the rights as men, same rights as men. It's the same thing. It's the access, it's the attempt to protect privilege. That's all what this protest is about.
Because here's what I don't get, right? If they were all upset about people protesting things when they're at work, why the fuck did they make that Kim Davis lady into a fucking saint
when she
wasn't giving marriage licenses?
Right. I forgot about her.
Because why? What is she doing?
Protecting families.
No. Specifically.
She's
denying rights to gay people.
Yeah. Or that cake
denying rights to gay people, preserving the privilege of heterosexual couples, right? Yeah. That's the core of conservative activism. It's always been, preserve my rights at the cost of other people's rights.
Or the cake dude.
Yeah, or the cake dude.
The cake dude, yeah.
Right?
Although it's weird because I remember he's all like, I'll make a cake for a gay birthday party, whatever. I'm just not going to make a cake for a gay wedding because it's against my religion. I don't understand that. No. But yeah, let me just bring this up real quick. You know, like Nike's not the good guy here.
No, it isn't.
We're going to make sure that we put that out there. Like
Phil Knight, my dude.
Yeah, it doesn't like, it's the same thing with like, I mean, you said it yourself. It's just, I mean, Nike here saw an opportunity to sell more product,
Nike is,
right?
is fundamentally looking at the market and is going, our up and coming demographic, the demographic that's going to buy it, is not 50-year-old men, white men. They're not.
Yeah.
It's what? The demographic of about 16 to 30.
Yeah.
So my age.
Our age, the millennial age. And the millennial age is increasingly more progressive, is increasingly more aware of social justice issues. And so what are we going to do? We're going to tap into that market.
Yeah.
Right? When McDonald's goes, we are a progressive company. What are they saying? At the end of the day...
We want your progressive money.
It's really want your progressive money. At the end of the day, these are all still corporations that are grounded in deep inequalities that are rooted in hyper-capitalism, but who have learned to successfully adapt. This is the thing about capitalism, right? So... Marx made his thesis. This always comes back to Marx in my world.
And Odysseus' eyes have rolled so far into the back of his head.
Yeah, I'm the Undertaker.
Look, the reality is that Marx's analysis is often quite accurate. Even if you disagree with communism, Marx as a form of analysis is pretty. You have to confront it in some way, shape, or form. He does argue, goes at one point, but the thing that he argues and he's wrong about is that capitalism doesn't fall and communism doesn't rise.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen. So the post-Marxists all kind of come up with this idea of like, well, why didn't this happen, right? And so they come up with a series of theories, like Adorno and Horkheimer come up with culture industry. Althusser comes up with the notion of the base and the superstructure and the analysis of a repressive, an ideological, and a coercive apparatus of control. But then along come Antonio Gramsci, and Gramsci argues for this thing called hegemony. In which he says that capitalism is hegemonic.
Yeah.
That it is such a cluster, it has a series of clusters of power that ally with themselves, but it's dynamic, meaning that it's not rigid. Mm-hmm. You can't just overthrow it, because when you make demands of it, it will meet you halfway.
Yeah.
It will co-opt some of your demands so that it looks like that it's adapted and changed while structurally changing nothing. It still remains on top.
Huh.
Capitalism never fully gives up capitalism, but it pretends to be like, oh man, you're right, we care about workers, which is why capitalism will always go, yeah, we gotta, why a company that will remain nameless but doesn't want to unionize will say, hey, I'm going to match 6% for your 401k and I'm going to give you education pay and I'm going to give you health care and benefits. Why? Because I'm the good guy. It's not because they're the good guy. It's because they want to meet the demands of the labor union so that you don't ever unionize.
Uh-huh.
You have no incentive to unionize.
Yeah. That is true.
The power, however, still remains in whose hands? The companies.
Yeah.
Right? The union is not there as a bargaining tool. This is something that corporations do all the time. And one of the things that corporations have done is they've become socially conscious. And that it's a branding technique, right? Nike is going Colin Kaepernick because they see money.
Yeah.
They see money. At the end of the day, if they really cared about racial equality, about prison reform, Nike could do something about it. They have money to do something about it. If they wanted to really change social inequality, they'd stop using slave labor to make their products.
Yeah, that's not going
to
happen.
Yeah, because, you know, little Cambodian kids are easier to pay.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, it's the same thing. Yeah, I understand. The same thing with Starbucks is technically a very progressive company, but they won't, you know, they don't stop calling the cops on black people, you know, in their stores,
they had
right?
a training day, my guy.
Or Jeff Bezos, right? Jeff Bezos is a trillionaire now, almost. And he's like, oh, I'm going to put all this money into the Dreamers. Great. That sounds good as a PR tactic. Here's a simple thing. How about you start paying your employees enough so they don't live in tents outside of your fucking campuses?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? Like, how
I love
about
that term, too, campus.
Campus, that's right? That's another thing, right? It's like Google, Facebook. Yeah. They have campuses, right?
Yeah.
They don't have employees. They have partners.
Yeah.
So these are all kind of ways where corporations, because they're hegemonic, they're able to adopt the language. So I'm not one of those that goes, oh, yeah, I'm going to go buy Nike. Well, I can sit there and go, yeah, conservatives are fucking crazy for burning their shoes. I can also go, Nike's a fucking manipulative piece of shit.
Yeah. Well, you know that, you know, it's the reality is, like, this, the Kaepernick contract, I guess, right, was thought up by the same people who thought that putting Kendall Jenner in a protest ad for Pepsi, it was the same guys. It's a guy in a suit who probably makes six figures a year who looks at trends, who goes, well, my daughter loves to be on Snapchat, so let's do something with that shit.
That's exactly right.
It's the same people who are thinking that up. It's the same fucking people, right? They either make the decision that works or they don't, and then they move on from there.
The problem, however, here is that this type of analysis of capitalism and corporations is not part of the mainstream. While leftists like myself will critique corporations, the average person is going, hell yeah, Colin Kaepernick has made it.
Yeah.
That's good.
I'll buy some Nikes.
I'm going to go buy some Nikes. So the strategy works. Uh-huh. And so long as the strategy works, you're never going to have actual real structural change. And that's a problem. So as much as I respect Kaepernick for raising awareness for racial inequality, police brutality, Black Lives Matter, a part of me is also kind of disappointed because does he really think he's going to be able to navigate the NFL, Nike waters like this? Does he really think that his message being co-opted by Nike is going to make real structural change that he's going for?
But it gives him an opportunity because they're paying him to do it.
Oh, yeah. They're paying him to do it.
Yeah.
Sure. Now he's allowed his message to become co-opted by a corporation. They own that message now.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
That's their brand now.
Yeah.
What does that do for the average black? I mean, let's be real. Nike, it exploits labor to a horrific degree. We're talking about sweatshops, slave labor.
Yeah.
We're talking about devastating effects on the environment, their factories, their their production. We're talking about devastating effects on black culture.
Right.
The exploitative nature that Nike relies on black athletes' labor, that relies on black cultural capital in order to build itself up, right? Like, that's where Nike's brand is. Uh-huh. That's where it is.
Yeah.
The reliance on people buying a pair of $400 sneakers.
Yeah, and making it into like a fucking
because it becomes a statement piece. Yeah. Right?
And think about the weird stereotype that gets associated with it too. I mean, really, like the idea of being shot over your Nikes is a cultural stereotype that's associated with black people. Right. And that's like, so I mean, Nike in and of itself contributes to that image, in my opinion, in its own way. Like, but does it do anything to really get away from that? Because at the end of the day, it kind of perpetrates this idea that Nikes are special enough that they deserve, that they should be, you know, taken, or that they should be shot over, or that they're so important that you need to collect hundreds of thousands of them. Never mind the fact that you only have 2 feet.
Yeah.
You have a bunch of these kind of factors that are playing into the Kaepernick situation, right? On one hand, you have corporations co-opting progressivist, grassroots, leftist language. This in of itself is problematic in a society that is increasingly harder to really overthrow the systems or make any real structural changes. This means that those systems become more entrenched. If suddenly the system is the good guy, is able to present itself as the good guy, you know, but that defangs protests and movements entirely.
Yeah,
you know, Black Lives Matter gets co-opted into Nike.
It becomes a slogan.
It becomes a slogan, not an actual policy movement-oriented movement or change-oriented movement. On the other hand, you have a very clear, coded, racialized language about Kaepernick and about black athletes and about their rights to protest. And then the third is the complete misunderstanding of patriotism and the language of protest. We see this very clearly. Repeatedly people are like, yeah, we are not protesting the anthem. We are not protesting the flag. We're not protesting troops. But somehow there's this complete misunderstanding, this weird American obsession with the flag that somehow it means
purpose?
Yeah, it means it's done on purpose. Some of it's done just chest beating. And we see this not just in you know, in our politics, we see it in the entertainment world as well.
But people misunderstanding things?
People, you end up with a movie that has a very clear message that end up people getting the total opposite of it. And when I think of this whole, like, flag, chest beating, we gotta respect the troops, bullshit that is really uniquely American and also, like, Soviet Union-esque. It's really the only two kind of places you can really think of that there's this weird nationalism. It's Starship Troopers. Have you ever seen the movie Starship Troopers? I'm taking this way back
here. Oh
yeah,
Neil Patrick Harris, where he doesn't play Neil Patrick Harris.
Yeah, it's a one time.
It's a one time, because usually he plays Neil Patrick Harris, right?
I know, he's an empath or something, isn't he?
He's a psychic.
A psychic.
Yeah, he's a psychic.
It's the one with the bugs in there.
Yeah, and the bugs.
Yeah. The Space Force.
The movie, I mean, very explicitly is a parody of militarism,
yeah.
Of jingoistic foreign policy of the, I mean, they're literally the formulation right off the bat is that there's two type of people in the world, right? Civilians and citizens. Uh-huh. Citizens serve in the military.
Yes.
Right? Civilians don't. Right, they're kind of weak, and they're
everyone not, has to go into the military. Like, it's a dream job.
Who becomes a citizen goes into the military.
Yeah.
The point is that literally, it's the director says at one point, the writer says at one point, war makes fascists of all of us.
Yeah,
that's the point that he's trying. But people watch Starship Troopers and like, hell yeah, kill bugs. I want to join the army. Yeah. I want to become, you know, yeah, I want to be one of those guys. Oh, yeah.
Space Force, motherfucker.
We get Space Force. We're gonna get matching tattoos. Like, no, what you're not understanding is that they're talking about how literally these people are being used as fodder in a fascistic system, right? It talks about the dangers of that type of jingoism. I mean, that right there is very clear in America. This weird, like, yeah, support the troops. You don't you dare kneel. It's like, you're not, whoa, hold on a minute.
Yeah.
I mean, what's the point of them, quote unquote, protecting our freedoms if we don't get to use those freedoms, right?
Yeah, it's
that's
true.
Bizarre. But that's Starship Troopers, right? That's the misunderstanding of that. This weird kind of, and I guess in some regards, the movie was made so absurdly that it wouldn't have worked anywhere other than America. Like, anywhere else, like, if that had been, like, a Brazilian movie, if that had been, like, an English movie, like, any British movie, like, any other movie industry had made that, they'd be like, it's a bit over the top. Yeah. No one is really like that. Only in America would a movie like that be successful, where people are like, fuck yeah, USA.
Yeah.
But that's what people did.
Even though it took place in Argentina.
It takes place. Well, this is a global world. It's a federation,
yeah, yeah, but
right?
But
they're in Buenos Aires.
The movie is an American-made movie, right?
Yeah.
And but that's the point. The point is that that can only work in America. And if you think back on it, it is kind of over the top silly.
Yeah, well, I mean, look at the militarism. Propaganda commercials in the movie itself. They're like, they're supposed to be almost corny.
Yeah.
They're very much about like the buy war bonds, we do our part thing from like World War II.
Killing,
like,
everyone can do their part. They can kill
the children are stomping on the bugs and shit.
Yeah, it's good, like, little children. Right? Like, it's insane, right? And it's funny because, like, in the movie, if you watch it, it's a very clever critique. If on the nose, a little clever critique of militarism.
Yeah.
You have a group of military intellects who kind of run everything.
Yeah.
Grunts that are basically used as fodder.
Yeah.
And then the enemy who's wholly other, they're bugs.
Yeah.
But then it turns out that they're actually quite smart.
Yeah.
And they're organized, right? It's like, that's literally American warfare, right? When we fought the Japanese, they were simian apes, they were monsters, right? Yeah. When we fight Muslims, they're hajis, they're not real, right? They're like this is very American, and yet no one got the movie. It's deeply misunderstood.
I think people also miss the fact that, like, the deaths in that movie are
brutal.
They're horrible. It's like, you know, there's like the firebug. Like, you literally see someone burning alive.
The movie, get cut in half. How does, like, the war start, right? Like, not before, like, once they arrive there. It's brutality at the beginning, right?
Yeah.
One of the things with the movie is that it spares no expense and, you know, no gory detail when it comes to death. There is no heroic death in that movie.
No.
That movie ends up with, like, right the second they land, just being a fucking clusterfuck. Right?
Yeah.
Just a disaster, because that's the point. War is a mess.
Even in training, remember, because Rico gets sent to the other thing because the guy takes his helmet off and he gets shot in the head, right?
Yeah.
Other than that one part where he's all like, permission to kill bugs, sir, in the cave, and he's just like sitting there shooting at things while they all run away. I mean, that was heroic.
That's not heroic. It's
really heroic about, he's like, just trying to kill some bugs, sir.
So, and also, like, all the grunts are presented as essentially
morons.
Dumb.
Yeah.
They're just dumb people who can't pass tests.
Yeah, but then Gary Busey's son plays the violin.
Yeah, he plays the violin.
I didn't know that was Gary Busey's son.
He looks like Gary
Busey. Yeah, Jake Busey.
I was gonna be like, damn, look at little Busey.
He looks like Gary Busey.
Yeah, no, he also looks like the guy from The Offspring.
Lead singer from The Offspring?
He always plays that character, like, obnoxious, weird
jackass.
Yeah. Well, he was the he was in that what is that, Michael J. Fox, the Frighteners.
Yeah, he was.
He
in
played
the
murderer, the serial killer in the Frighteners. Killer. He has that look though. Busey does too, though. Let's face it.
Busey's fucking crazy.
Oh, he's nuts.
Yeah, he's a Trump supporter too.
He's insane.
It's not that surprising. I love his acronyms though. Like, what? He makes fear is
fighting equal opportunity racists.
That's actually not a bad witch. One.
Yeah. Even though that's not how you spell fear. But
good for you.
Yeah.
There's an O there.
Yeah.
Not an A. That's all right.
No, he's all like, it was on Celebrity Rehab. It was all like, fear stands for false evidence appearing real. Oh, and it, like, shit. Goes on weird shit. Like, he goes on these weird...
He's absolutely insane.
The man is nuts.
What are other movies that we've seen that, like...
So, like...
People are completely misunderstood. Because Starship Troopers is an obvious one.
Yeah.
It's a little different. It's not quite the same because I don't think these movies are meant to have, like, a very specific message. But I always feel like there is a unintended misinterpretation of certain characters in movies. Like, the classic American gangster movie in and of itself... kind of brings this up, in my opinion, because you look at movies like Scarface, American Gangster, which is with Denzel Washington, right? And we have this new movie called White Boy Rick coming out pretty soon, and right, it's about like the American drug trade. And while the directors do make it a point to make them look more like anti-heroes than actual, you know, than anything else, I think our capitalist society kind of dictates that these guys end up becoming these like bastions of capitalism for
people. Or are weird, like toxic masculinity cultures. Like, they're badasses. Right?
Yeah, so it's like this... I mean, I can tell you, like, when we were in high school, you know... I mean, people still like this, but, like, when we were in high school, I loved Scarface. Like, I still love Scarface as a movie, right? I think it's great. But when you look at the things that Tony Montana does throughout the whole movie, I mean, the way that he treats women, the way that he treats his sister, the way that he treats his business associates, and the fact that he goes crazy and paranoid and he murders people, right? Like, and but then, you know, people still look at Tony Montana as this character that they, like, strive to be like. I mean, every single meme that I see about... This is just every single business Instagram that I've seen have been about, like, you know, you got to hustle to get your stuff. You got to do all this shit to be good. It's always a picture of Tony Montana in his white suit.
Yeah.
He's smoking a cigar, you know, he's in this club and stuff. It always makes him look like this uber capitalist. Yeah. Never mind the fact that, you know, he was a brutal, heartless murderer, cocaine trafficker, like all this other shit.
Well, I think that was misinterpreted unintentionally.
It's also, it's less like a misinterpretation or misunderstanding, but it's just missing the fucking point.
Yeah.
Because the movie doesn't have, as you rightly noted, those movies don't have a message. Scarface doesn't have a message, right?
Yeah.
But like, you end up, the author doesn't want you to be like Tony Montana, but you still end up liking him. It's like the people missed... That's more of an indictment.
No, but here's the thing,
fucking culture, right?
So, that's true. Here's our culture for you.
Yeah, right? That guy's a good guy. He's a drug dealer.
Now, look, the author of American Psycho literally created Patrick Bateman to be like a critique of our inner violence and what we think about in our head when we're getting violent, right? That's what it's supposed to be. But people see him as like this, like alpha male, right? Mm. Like do anything to like get ahead. And
we've had family members who remain nameless that have gone like repeatedly
showed us that card scene.
That card scene,
yeah, right.
I love that scene, by the way. Yeah, I just love how intense it is.
Yeah, right. It's intense, and everyone's like, "Oh, look, it's so cool."
Or his like morning routine, right?
Yeah,
with the mask and the whole thing. It's all creepy as shit.
It's literally supposed to show us like what it means. Like, so there's a big thing. There's a scene in the movie where the ATM asks him to feed a cat, right? Yeah. And he's trying to kill a cat and put it in the machine. And we don't know if it's real or not. That's not the point of the movie, right? The point is, this is the kind of shit that goes on in our head, and we need to critique ourselves and see what's going on in our minds. Another movie that does that very well is Inception, right?
Yeah.
So people think like Inception, like the ending of the movie is supposed to be like, oh, is he in a dreamland, right? It's supposed to like... Oh, it's supposed to make you think, whatever. It's supposed to make you think. It's supposed to make you think that reality is what you make it.
Yeah,
right?
Perception is reality.
Yeah, perception is reality. That, like, the fact that he goes out there and sees his kids and is going to be with his kids, he doesn't care.
Yeah, both of those movies aren't deeply misinterpreted, right?
Right, yeah.
They're missing the point that this is a... They end up debating the stuff that's not important, like the author, as you mentioned, isn't that, they don't want you to debate whether Patrick Bateman did the crazy shit that he did, or if Inception, did he really get out of the dream or not. Yeah. They want you to not debate that. They want you to understand that perception is reality.
But people also think, like in American Psycho, that you're supposed to sympathize with Patrick Bateman's the character of Patrick Bateman, right? Played by Christian
Bale. Competition gets to him.
You're not supposed to sympathize with
him. Well, I mean, it's also the same. I mean, with Wall Street, right? The famous...
What, Gordon Gekko?
Gordon Gekko. Greed, for lack of a better term, is good. Right? I mean, it's always misquoted too, by the way. But that's not the point. The point is a serious critique of capitalism.
Uh-huh.
At the end, Gugan Gekko's a bad guy.
Yeah, and he turns Fox to be a bad guy, right. too.
It's, the point is that this is these are not good people to aspire to be.
I like how they both have animal names. But
everyone in, you know, who's watched those movies, they end up wanting to emulate those type of people. They end up wanting to be them. They end up quoting them. I mean, how many people are quoting Boiler Room? Or how many people are quoting Wall Street? Or
I got a job quoting Boiler Room once.
Americans, right? They want you got to quote these people. Yeah, that hustle. That they're missing the point of that. Another example, and I think that this ties in really well with Jason Bateman, is actually from Fight Club.
Tyler Durden.
So Fight Club is the quintessential example of how dumb movie watchers are.
There is explain.
For the record, Fight Club is an amazing book.
Yeah.
Fight Club, and they made a graphic novel out of it.
There's a new graphic novel that came out, right? Isn't if I'm not mistaken?
It was very it's very recent.
Is this supposed to be a part two?
Yeah. Yeah, so like Chuck Palahniuk had released a bunch of stuff for it because I think he actually talked about how people misinterpreted the movie a lot. So
Do you think that's David Fincher's fault in the way he directed it?
A little bit. So there's this notion known as death of the author. Uh-huh. The death of the author is a literary approach to how you read things.
Oh yeah, you brought this up with J.K. Rowling.
Yeah, Roland Barthes, I think, if I'm not mistaken, Roland Barthes is the person who came up with this idea known as death of the author. The idea is that the author writes something, and then the author dies, mm-hmm. meaning the author has no say on how people interpret their works. People can go in whichever direction. Now, I don't actually ascribe to this particularly. It comes out of literary criticism and literary theory. I come out of a more what is known as historicism, which argues that everything has a context, right? And that the author's context matters. This way we view the text and the person as in dialogue with one another. That there is a dialogical process and meaning is mediated between the two of them. Nowhere, I think, is the death of the author more evident and also seen as hella problematic than in Fight Club. So the author portrays it fundamentally as a critique of toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
Right? A critique. Tyler Durden is not a good person.
That is true. Yeah.
Tyler Durden is a psychopath.
Yeah.
Tyler Durden is the extreme of violence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yet, people watch Fight Club.
And want to be.
And they see either a critique of consumerism, which is bad. There is a critique of consumerism. But they want to be. They think that the answer to consumerism is Tyler Durden. We're going to fight. We're going to be violent. Second of all, they miss the fact that the violence is consensual at first.
Yeah.
That it's a Fight Club. That it's when it becomes non-consensual, building up, blowing up buildings, that he's moved to extremist. So they miss this notion of it. And instead, what ends up happening, I think this is nothing is more evidence of the indictments of both the stupidity of the American audience and the stupidity of American males, that they look at Tyler Durden's like, that's the guy I want to be. That guy is not what you want to be.
No.
Well, certainly he's described in the book as charming and attractive and whatnot. He is essentially a crazy person, a violently crazy person.
Yep.
That is not something to aspire to be. And yet everybody's favorite, every fucking 15-year-old's favorite movie is Fight Club.
Yeah.
When they're 15. And unfortunately, they grow up. They grow up and they end up being or trying to be the Tyler Durdens of the world.
Yeah.
They want to be it, but they don't understand that the Tyler Durdens of the world don't give any answers. What he provides is an illusion. Yeah. That through violence you can gain control of something. But how does the movie end? With the buildings collapsing and the guy still feeling just as empty, holding on to the hand.
The narrator?
The narrator, right? Yeah. The narrator is not left in a better place.
Yeah.
The narrator is not victorious.
Yeah. In fact, he's at a worse place because he shot himself. Yeah.
The narrator is at a worse place. He shoots himself and then watches as the world around him crumbles.
Yeah.
That is the critique. It's a critique of how crazy men are. That they're literally, if you think about what they do, they create a club where they beat the shit out of each other.
Yep.
And they think that that gives them meaning. They find meaning in beating each other up. Think of how insane that is.
Yeah.
Think of how nuts that is. Try to explain that to an alien that comes down. Why are you punching each other? Because it's manly. Well, why?
Yeah.
Right?
It's out frustrations.
Why? Like it doesn't answer the why questions, is it?
Yeah.
But yet everybody latches onto that.
His name was Bob.
They misunderstand it.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I think one of the scenes in that movie that really stand out to me in terms of that is the scene where Tyler, brings the takes the store clerk out with the gun to his head, and he pulls his license, and he keeps asking those questions, and then he justifies it, be like, it's like, if you don't go to school tomorrow to do what you're going to do, then I'm going to come back because I have your address now. I'm going to kill you or whatever it is, right? Okay. And, you know, Tyler goes, this is, you know, it's like now he's going to go, like, you know, yeah, I scared the shit out of him, but now tomorrow he's going to go and he's going to start looking at school. He's going to start doing what he finally wants to do. So there's this weird thing about this weird violent psychopath liberating people because somehow...
Except that violence never liberates people.
Yeah.
Right? Violence, and that's the whole point of the movie. They aren't liberated in the end. The dude literally has to shoot himself in the head.
Violence begets violence.
Violence begets violence.
Yeah. I feel like that's a George R. R. Martin thing, too. We talked about that in some of our videos. But one of the movies that I always thought was kind of a great indicator of that was also V for Vendetta.
Violence begets violence is very big in V for
Vendetta. Very much so. I mean, Alan Moore... More in the comic book. Yeah, Alan Moore... completely separate himself from the movie project because the movie is starkly different from the actual graphic novel itself. I mean, I urge you to read and watch both of them, right?
Because neither V nor the detective are good guys in the comic book.
That's it really, at the end of the day, like, number one, the movie itself, Alan Moore believes is characteristically American, when the story it should have been characteristically British.
Yeah.
Right? And that was a big part of Alan Moore's issues with it. But also the fact is, it's like Alan Moore's kind of showing what happens when the extremes of fascism clash with the extremes of anarchy. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, V is, in the movie, right, technically a good guy. Because it is believed
that... Or an anti-hero, at least.
Or an anti-hero, right? Because he actually believed that the director of the movie... was trying to kind of push this not anti-Bush, but like trying to criticize the Bush administration when it came out. And I can't argue with that, right? Because it very much did a lot in terms of the visuals and the way that they did things. What's crazy is that if you actually read the novel, though, it kind of goes in this whole thing where, like, the vigilantism isn't any better than what the totalitarian government is doing.
In the movie, there's this idea that the ideals are the best, right? Like, the ideals, freedom, liberty, etc. And then you end up, the government should fear you. But at the core of the message of V for Vendetta, particularly in the comic books, is that there is no ideology, just violence. And there's two forms of violence. There's sanctioned violence, that is the violence that is committed by the state, and unsanctioned violence, that's terroristic violence, right?
Yeah.
Yet at the end of the day, it's both violence,
and
it's done for power's sake.
And there's and no matter what, in those extremes, there's victims on both sides,
there's
right?
Victims.
If you look at the way that, even in the movie, they did this, probably the cinematically one of the most interesting scenes in the movie itself, and also kind of one of the most disturbing, combined with what they took in the comic book itself, was a scene of him conditioning Evie to become a vigilante, right?
Yeah.
The fact that V himself took Evie hostage and put her through those things, put her in prison, right?
Tortured her,
sent the letters in there, shaved her head, broke her spiritually and emotionally in order for her to come up as this, like, neo, this new revolutionary. Right, it's sadistic when you look at it.
Stockholm syndrome,
Well, she's not in love with him in the same way as a Stockholm syndrome. Whereas in the movie, she's much more. By the end, she comes to terms with.
So is she gaslit?
She becomes more in terms with his ideals, not necessarily him as a person. Uh-huh. The point, however, that I think people are missing in that is that violence produces radicalism. Is the point of the movie is that it starts off with a totalitarian. It starts off with terrorist acts.
Yeah.
An act of terrorism produces a totalitarian regime.
Yeah.
People sacrifice their rights and they accept the violence of the totalitarian regime. The violence of the totalitarian regime in turn creates terrorists.
Yeah.
The terrorists in turn create further terrorists and crackdowns by the state. So that in a very kind of George R. R. Martin way, there are no winners.
Yeah.
More violence.
And if you look at history in any way, a lot of the times those terrorist organizations that do successfully put in those coup d'etats become totalitarian themselves.
Generally so.
Yeah.
Almost always.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to end it on a lighter note with the movies, all right? So one of the movies that I was looking up that's misunderstood is 500 Days of Summer.
Yeah, it's very much
misunderstood. I like that movie.
Yeah, you know why it's misunderstood? I'm going to blame it all on one person.
Who?
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
You can't talk about Joseph Gordon-Levitt like that.
Yeah, it's because everyone likes him, right? It's hard to hate the guy. Like, he can't
be... Yeah, okay. I hated him in Looper.
Yeah. I mean, everyone hated Looper though, yeah, so like, it doesn't even matter.
That's because he changed his face to look like Bruce Willis. That's
just saying, if he was more baby faced,
if he was more baby faced, yeah, you could hate him. But the thing is, so
bald prejudice right there.
People think that that movie is a rom com, right? Like it's supposed to be this romantic comedy. No, it's a critique on how selfish men can be and look at women like objects.
It's because, the entitlement.
Yeah, it's right? the because Summer flat out tells him that she doesn't know what she wants and she doesn't want to be in a relationship, but he's still trying to push her into this relationship because that's what he wants, right? He's seen as the good guy, although he's a selfish, entitled piece of shit and thinks he's owed Summer's love because he likes her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, that's the actual...
That's also a weird... I would say it's in some regards, it ends up being an indictment of our standards in relationships, right? Is that sometimes the things that show up on the silver screen, the big screen, sound romantic until they happen in real life.
Yeah.
Right?
It's like, this is the Twilight syndrome I often point out. It's like, if you ever watch Twilight, right, that shit does not in any way, shape, or form resemble romance.
No,
right?
It's not.
That's a guy stalking a girl.
Yeah.
That's a guy stalking and possessing a girl.
Yeah.
And yet somehow people view it as romantic.
Well, it's the same thing in the police song. Yeah. I'll be watching.
Yeah, that's not romantic. And same thing with this in this instance. Is that no matter which way you twist it, right? This is an indictment how fucked up our relationships are. That this is a really, really fucked up, emotionally abusive, manipulative relationship.
Yep.
And yet somehow people are like, oh, we want them to end up together.
No,
fucker. It's like, no, no.
Yeah, Joseph Gordon-Levitt himself says, like when girls come up to him, be like, I had a crush on your character for that movie. He's like, why? Rewatch that movie. I'm a selfish, entitled prick in that movie.
It's a horrible movie.
Like, I'm not supposed to be the guy that you fall in love with.
We've had two Joseph Gordon-Levitt movies mentioned as misunderstood ones in this
podcast. You know why? Episode. It's because he's so damn likable. Everyone misunderstands
him. Misunderstand him because he's so likable.
Yep, everything gets misunderstood with fucking Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Wait, what are the two movies?
Inception.
Oh, that's right.
Inception and Five Days of Summer.
I forgot he's in
He ends up hooking up with, what's her face? Juno in that movie.
Yes.
With Ellen Page?
Ellen Page.
Yeah,
they make out in the end.
Okay. Let us know what your thoughts are. Like, are there movies that you've watched that you realize that either you misunderstood the point of the movie when you looked it up, you Wikipedia'd or you read it, and you're like, wait, I didn't think that's what the movie was.
Yeah.
Or your friends, you're like, your friends watch a movie and they completely miss the point of the movie. They're like, oh my God, it's about this. And you're like, no, that's not what this is about at all. Mm-hmm. Let us know, because there's a lot out there. These are just some that I think stood out to us and I think are the most relevant to kind of the things that we're thinking about here, relationships, patriotism, capitalism, right? They're all kind of tied into it.
I'm going to get in the car and listen to Nina Simone's Misunderstood.
Yeah, Nina Simone's a good way to end the night. In general, let us know, and of course, also let us know what your thoughts are about Colin Kaepernick. Are you excited about him being the brand of Nike? You have an issue with this? What are your thoughts? I'd like to hear from you guys, and Diz will let you know how you can get a hold of us.
Yeah, you could catch us on Facebook, facebook.com/currentlynerdy. We're on the tweets @currentlynerdy. We're on Tumblr, currentlynerdy.tumblr.com, Instagram @currentlynerdy. You could catch us on YouTube. New video should be coming out soon. So watch out for that. Just search Currently Nerdy on YouTube. We should be putting out a video. Hopefully by this time next week, we'll have another video out. We're on Stitcher, Google Play, and the iTunes podcast app. Make sure you subscribed. You gave us a 5-star review and make your friends subscribe and listen to us. If you want to get a hold of us individually, you can. V, how can I get a hold of you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at VTran214. That's VYTRAN214. You can find my websites at thesandwichslayer.com or 7crossroads.com. Ali.
You can catch me at my website at alilomi.com or on Instagram and Twitter at AAOLOMI, as well as on our sister podcast, Head on History, where you can hear the complete season 3. Diz.
Before I tell you where you could find me at, there's a project I want to talk about that's very near to my heart. It's a Kickstarter for a documentary about Ahmad Zoyer, who is an Afghan musician. The Kickstarter is out right now. It needs to get funded by the end of this month for them to make the movie.
Don't do it.
Do it.
No, I'm just kidding.
He's Ali's mom's favorite Afghan artist.
He
is. He's my mom's favorite Afghan artist. He's my favorite Afghan artist. They're doing a documentary about his life right now. They need funds. If you search Ahmad Zahir documentary, it's AHMAD space ZAHIR documentary online. You'll find the Kickstarter page. If you can donate, donate. It's a good cause. And it's going to help make a movie about one of my heroes come true. But you can find me everywhere at DizBullet, D-I-Z-B-U-L-L-A-H.
We're everyone here at Currently Nerdy. Thank you for tuning in. And remember, stay smart, sexy nerds.
And all hail the Currently Nerdy Empire. Hail.